Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Today is December 29th, 2011. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. I hope you're having a good holiday. I sure am. Funny story, this podcast that you're listening to, I just spent the last 20 minutes or so trying to record it. I thought I was doing great. Everything seemed to be going well. I had gone out yesterday and I bought a windscreen, like a foam cover for the head of the microphone, which I was hoping would just soften up the sound a little bit. And I got home, I put it on, and I was all excited about recording a podcast today. And then, 15 or 20 minutes into the show, I realized that I'm talking into the wrong end of the microphone because I couldn't see which end was the end that my mouth should point at. So here we are. We're starting again, and we're just going to go for like a one-shot all the way through kind of a thing. But before I will even start a podcast today, I have to tell you that we have a new video up on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search for The Magic of Pronouns. You will find it. It's been out for about 4 days, not doing so well. Not a very big opening weekend for The Magic of Pronouns. I think the full title is The Magic of Pronouns, Tips for Aspiring Criminals / Politicians and Ron Paul. I'm trying to, grab the coattails of the whole Ron Paul thing that's going on right now, too. Hopefully that will generate some hits. So this is the new thing. I'm making videos. I really enjoy this. I think that this is a far more effective way to reach the original target audience of this show. I was hoping the show would be appealing to people ages 14 to 24. And, when I look at the analytics, it looks like that is a majority of the audience, but I think we could do much better on YouTube. I just don't think that a lot of young people are searching iTunes or Podkicker or whatever for educational podcasts. They're on YouTube, and they're not just there to watch Chinese chipmunks turn around. Like, there's a lot of good educational videos on YouTube with hundreds of thousands of hits, and that's mostly young people who are spending time on YouTube. So I want to get in there and establish a presence. I really think that that is the next step. I appreciate all the feedback that I've gotten on the videos so far. I just need people to watch them. So thousands and thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people actually, have subscribed to School Sucks Podcast on Podomatic or iTunes or however else people subscribe to podcasts. That, of course, is no reflection of how many people actually listen to the show each time an episode is posted, but that's thousands of people too. And one thing that I would really appreciate if people could do is if they go to YouTube, School Sucks Podcast, so it's YouTube.com/user/School Sucks Podcast, subscribe to our channel, watch these videos, please comment, embed them, share them, like them. In fact, once you're viewing the video on YouTube, there's just a button that says like, and you click it, and this little drop-down appears, and there's icons for Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. And then it just gives you the URL and you can share it. It's easy to do and it really, really helps. And this is the future. This is what I'm going to do. And I am actually getting a team together, I think. A team. Sorry, my voice kind of crapped out when I said team. But very creative, talented people who might be interested in helping out with some video production, because I want to make a lot of these things. I think that's the secret. There's lots of secrets to, like, being successful on YouTube, and I'm in the process of learning them right now. And, of course, I'm still learning the video production. So listen to me ramble. Anyway, I really appreciate whatever people can do to help out. Certainly go there and subscribe. View the videos. If as many people listen to the podcast, view the videos, we'd be in good shape. Now, I was going to do a podcast. I can't remember about what. Oh, it was going to be about a movie. I wanted to talk about this movie, School Sucks at the Movies Part 2, But before we even get into that, I want to just talk a little bit about a conversation that I had on Christmas with a few family members. As you know, we recently did this show about the whole Santa thing, the story about the second grade teacher who revealed to her class that there was no Santa. And I was talking about that with my brothers, and, you know, my mom was listening, and she said, "Brett, have you heard about this Elf on the Shelf?" And I had not heard of this. In fact, when she told me about this, first of all, she said, "Oh, Brett, you're not going to like this." And when she told me about it, like, I almost didn't believe it. But then, yeah, I said, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Let's play the ad that's playing on television. It's just like a 30-second spot. And then we can talk about this a little bit.
Every year at Christmas, Santa sends his elves to watch you. And they go back and tell him who's been bad and who's been good.
So, yeah, that's happening. That's a real thing. And the way this works, you know what? Let me actually go to the Wikipedia page, and I'll give you their little description of it. But this is a doll, and it comes with a book. And here's the story. Every day from Thanksgiving until Christmas Eve, each family's scout elf watches over the children. And then at night, once everyone goes to bed, the elf flies back to the North Pole to report back to Santa about what activities, good and bad, took place throughout the day. Before the family wakes up each morning, the scout elf flies back from the North Pole and hides. By hiding in a new spot each morning around the house, the scout elf and the family play an ongoing game of hide and seek. This is a doll, by the way. The Elf on the Shelf explains that elves get their magic by being named. In the back of each book, families have an opportunity to write their elf's name and date that they adopted it. Once the elf is named, the scout elf receives its special Christmas magic, which allows it to fly to and from the North Pole. However, the magic might go if touched, so the rule for the Elf on the Shelf states, quote, "There's only one rule you have to follow, so I will come back and be here tomorrow. Please do not touch me. My magic might go, and Santa won't hear about all I've seen and all I know." Although families aren't supposed to touch their scout elf, they can talk to it and tell it all their Christmas wishes so it can report back to Santa accurately. Bullshit. So, I mean, you know, I think about when I was a kid, what I would have thought of this. Like, even when I was 9, I would have been pretty insulted, I think, by this little ruse. And you know, here we are. Like, I'm thinking, like, when was I 9? So we're like 25 years further away from the Middle Ages than we were when I was 9. And in this case, it almost seems like a step in the wrong direction. I am happy looking at the Wikipedia page to see that there is a section labeled controversy, and it says, some parents feel that the use of the elf on the shelf to spy on children smacks of McCarthyism and chose alternate strategies for encouraging good behavior. Well, that's good. Thank you to those parents from me. And you know what? Like, after everything that's happened in this country in the last 50 years, why are we still using the term McCarthyism? I mean, if you think about, like, COINTELPRO and the DARE program in school encouraging kids to snitch on their parents for smoking marijuana, and the Department of Homeland Security and the TSA and the body scanners and, you know, Janet Napolitano's whole "if you see something, say something" Walmart campaign. Do we really still need to be using McCarthyism? Isn't that something that we could update? Certainly plenty of choices. So anyway, on the Wikipedia page, the controversy section links to another article that I just want to open and take a look at real quick. It is from the website cafemom.com. And the title of the article, which this source came from, it says, Lesson 28, The Elf on the Shelf, Innocent Holiday Whimsy or Dangerous Informant? And it is by Jenny Lawson. I just want to share this with you. It's real quick. A few years ago, I went to visit my sister around Christmas, and her kids told me they had to be good, very good, because, quote, the elf on the shelf is watching us. It sounded like the beginning of a bad Stephen King novel, but it turns out it was just a tiny stuffed elf that the parents hide around the house. Oh, okay, so the parents hide it. The elf doesn't hide itself. I had questions about that. So the elf can report back to Santa. Because nothing says Merry Christmas like intentionally bringing in a spy to hide in your house, eavesdrop on your family, and then report all questionable activity back to the authorities. I told my sister that I thought the whole thing smacked of McCarthyism, and she pointed out that it was more accurately a manifestation of Freud's superego in elf form. I countered that most of Freud's theories have been disproved. I agree. She argued that it was the stuffed elf that made her children brush their teeth more often. I carefully considered that, then asked where I could buy one. I didn't buy one, though, mostly because I couldn't find one. And also because I really don't want a tiny elf judging me whenever I make a booze slushy at midnight or purposely avoid flossing. I face enough judgment in this world without paying for some soulless-eyed elf to question me whenever I have to make my kids sandwiches out of waffles because I forgot to buy bread. I get enough of that from my husband, thank you very much. Plus, the cats love to disembowel Haley's stuffed toys, so I'm fairly sure that having my kid wake up to a mutilated elf spy who is expected back at Santa's workshop would be traumatic at best. Frankly, if I'm going to stoop to using stuffed animals to force my kid to be good, I'll just skip the elf and buy a teddy bear nanny cam. Then I'll sit down at Christmas to run a holiday reel of all the injustices done in this house. Except that most of the injustices would be videos of the cats purposely knocking things into the toilet and me screaming at them about how they don't deserve plumbing, so really it would just be a highlight reel of why the cats and I don't get along. That's why I'm against bringing in stuffed animal espionage during the holidays. P.S. This post was originally supposed to be about the true meaning of Christmas, but then I got distracted with McCarthyism and cats. I'm not entirely sure how that happened. I blame communism. Ooh, I'm going to bookmark this. I like this lady's sense of humor. And it looks like she writes a lot about these kinds of issues. This elf on the shelf, let me tell you, what a creep. I'll put a picture in the show notes. I will say this, though. I was pleased when I did a couple more Google searches, both with the phrase elf on the shelf in quotes, once accompanied by the word creepy, and then again, accompanied by the word controversy, and I was pleased to see that there are many people out there, despite the fact, according to Wikipedia, that 1.5 million of these things have been sold. That's a lot. There are some people, plenty of people anyway, who are echoing the same sentiments. Now, it's more than just the whole surveillance thing. I mean, I guess that's one part of the issue. Another part of the issue is the whole fantasy and, you know, lying to kids for the convenience of adults. If you listen to, I have a fair amount of experience with this, you listen to sort of mainstream thinking people talk, you could really, really pick this up from talk radio. In fact, just to interject this, I was talking with a group of people at lunch yesterday about the whole Ron Paul thing. And these were all like-minded people. And I said, you know, for these people who are pouring all of this time and effort into, you know, getting Ron Paul elected president or even, you know, having him win the Iowa caucus, they would really benefit, I think, from going and turning on a talk radio station, liberal or conservative station. I get a couple, one of each, at least in Manchester, and seeing what's out there as far as like the fantasies that they're espousing as fact. But I think, from my experience, you know, watching other people and being a person cling to fantasy, and I don't mean like specific fantasy, and I think this is religious, this is social, this is political, this is personal, we can let go of a lot of the fantasies that are sort of imposed upon us for the convenience of adults when we're little. But it often seems like something needs to go in their place. It seems like once that hole is put there in a very young and impressionable mind, like once that hole is burrowed into the brain of a potentially rational creature where fantasies are dumped into, it seems like even once all the most ridiculous ones can be discarded, something else always needs to go in its place. Like I talked about Santa as a template. Now, let's be clear. I'm not a psychologist or a neurologist. I think that's obvious. There are no holes burrowed into heads. But the thing is, people are faced with reality today in, I think, more clear way than they've been faced with it in the past. I mean, just the access to information, the flow of information, it's kind of hard to deny what's going on out there. And people seem to seek these simpler, softer, less confronting ways of dealing with reality. And, you know, a way to do that is fantasy. This is one of the things that was discussed in this video. You can hear one of the other, the video that I just made. It starts out with Rick Santorum, who's, oh boy, he's something else. But he's talking about, you know, terrorists don't hate us for anything that we've ever done. Us, we, and by us and we, I guess he means, you know, groups of unelected foreign policy advisors and generals meeting behind the closed doors of a room that you and I and Rick Santorum were not in, but somehow that's a we. They hate us because of who we are. That's what he says in the clip. And, you know, poor Ron Paul. I mean, he is just getting ambushed up there by, it seems like, everybody. But still, in hindsight, I can think of so many more powerful things that he could say in response to some of the craziness that comes out of these other people's mouths in these debates. But, I mean, like, can we just entertain the possibility that the United States, even if you all believe it was a country based on great ideas, has a corrupt government and a foreign policy that is myopic and run by special interest? Is that more realistic than pretending that it's the protagonist in a 1950s Western? I think so. And like, even though I know it's coming, I'm still amazed every time I hear it. I've been watching these debates, I think, maybe just hoping for some show material. I still do have that. Well, we have a logical fallacies series that will be coming up eventually, and I still have that whole doublespeak thing on the back burner. So I've got some feelers out there for show material, and I'm watching those debates. But yeah, like, I know it's coming, but I still can't even believe it when I'm hearing it. I mean, all of that stuff about the impact of U.S. foreign policy, 70-plus interventions around the world since the end of World War II, that's like a settled issue. There's no rational conversation. There's no rational debate about that, I guess I should say, anymore. But people can just open their mouths and, like, I don't know if they know they're lying, or it, I guess that's really not technically lying, but then they can use these fantasies to, like, build new stuff on top of them. Like, now there's a new evil in Iran and they're developing nuclear weapons. Oh, what a mess. But we were talking about elves, I think. Let's get back to the elves. How do we get to U.S. foreign policy from elves? The fantasies. All right, so I was saying that, you know, the fantasy, not even the big thing here. Okay. But you see, I mean, how that need seems to stay there. And I guess maybe it's just like conditioning from a very young age to be intellectually lazy and to not look hard, to just want simple answers. I'm guilty of this sometimes too. Well, certainly, oh my goodness, in my personal life, sure. But even when I'm like doing this show, when, you know, I'm trying to research something and I'm trying to find out answers, sometimes I just look at you like, oh man, you know, you got to edit, you got to do all this stuff. Just find the quickest thing to, you know, the quickest way to your information. And, you know, I've had to go back and take things back and say I was wrong because, you know, sometimes I jump the gun on certain things. But, you know, I was certainly conditioned to be the same way. And we're still, I think, trying to shake that stuff off, that intellectual laziness of just looking for the easiest answer possible and the most comfortable answer and the answer that fits best with what we already believe. Elves, foreign policy, fantasy. Okay, back on track. That all that stuff, the surveillance and the fantasy, that's all secondary as far as I'm concerned. I think the primary issue here is the manipulation of behavior. This is a more concrete way than just this story of Santa Claus and you better be good, you know, he's making a list, he's checking it twice kind of stuff. I mean, this really is a more like I would like to think we could be letting go of this stuff, and this is just making it more concrete. Now there's a spy elf that watches you. Now, one of the books that we've mentioned several times on this show in the past is by Alfie Cohn. It's called Punished by Rewards. One of the things that he talks about, you know, primary thrust of the book, I would say, is that when it comes to intrinsic motivation, and of course I totally agree with this, that punishments and rewards kind of have the same effect. You know, and punishments and rewards just seem so automatic in behavior management for teachers and parents and authority figures that they wind up destroying activities that are already intrinsically motivated. You know, that punishments and rewards just have to accompany everything. I'm not a parent. I know I say that all the time, but I watch young children and I have a lot of experience working with young children, and I don't, you know, by and large, I don't see people in them who want to be bad. You know, like, even everything that a young child does is about getting some kind of positive emotion, some kind of positive response, or what they see as a positive response from adults. Even if it's, you know, throwing a tantrum or acting out, those kinds of things, it just seems like that's about, hey, I need some attention. I need some love. I need some understanding. And it's easy to say, and I think it's correct to say, that punishments and rewards do not have a long-term positive impact on behavior, but that's not even really the issue either. That's sort of the effect or the practicality of it. And I mean, I just think that there's a real moral question here. Like, imagine treating adults this way. Imagine using everything that some adult wants or doesn't want you know, to happen in their life as levers for another adult to control their behaviors. It would be very unhealthy dynamic. I think everyone would agree, but it's okay to do it with children because, after all, they're pets. I mean, that basically seems to be common practice. Now, people don't say that, but it's pretty apparent in what shows up in the treatment of children. And I know this is like my catchphrase, but this translates so well to the adult world. And it's not just in all of the things we see, like the success of talk radio, the success of this mythology, these mythologies about U.S. foreign policy being put forward by these Republican candidates, the success of the state and where we are today with surveillance and the police state. You know, in my opinion, all of those things at least result in part from this practice of manipulating less knowledgeable, less powerful people, right? Not working with people, but doing things to people. That's what all of this is. That's what all of this is about. And you know, that kind of manipulation can continue forever. At the expense of the less powerful, less knowledgeable, for the benefit of the people who already have the power. Whether we're talking about the child-adult relationship, the employee-employer relationship, the so-called citizen-government relationship, whatever. But the other thing is, I've been a professional for a long time, you know, like my professional career started like 13 years ago. And I've worked with a lot of different people as coworkers and having to deal with people in schools and all that. And there are so many, and this is like friends of mine, even myself at periods in my life, who are just kind of shuffling their feet through the burden of having to be alive. There's no goal. There's no ambition. It's just like, I hate my job, but I need the paycheck, and that's it. There's no internal drive in any of that. So happiness and self-esteem just becomes entirely conditional on externalities, which, you know, sometimes can be controlled and sometimes they can't. But just, you know, cramming stuff in that hole. And that's, it's not everybody. It might not even be a majority of people, but and it doesn't mean that there aren't people who are successful and happy. Of course, there's plenty of them, but I would just like, what's possible? What is the opportunity cost of this manipulation? You know, in what shows up in the adult world, what else could have been possible for so many people? Like, how many more people could be living more fulfilling lives if they weren't treated like this when they were young? I don't know the answer, but I think the results of this kind of treatment of children are very apparent. These adults have kids. They, don't want to take the time and the effort to talk about being good, being ethical for the right reasons. So let's just use threats and fantasies and freaking elves as levers to get the behavior that we want for our convenience, because shit, we work all week at a job that we hate, but we need that paycheck. That's what grew out of punishments and rewards. So this show was supposed to be about this movie that I saw that I wanted to talk about. Oh, I wore myself out, though. So that's going to be the next show. Here's something. Maybe I'll give it a couple of days. Actually, maybe I'll wait. And we'll use Facebook. Facebook kind of functioning as our forum right now. And I like that. I wish it was a little bit more active there. So if you ever see anything that you think would be interesting as far as what we talk about on the show, throw it up on that Facebook page and, you know, let's get a little thread going about it. But the movie that I want to talk about is Charlie Bartlett. Just rewatched it. I've seen it maybe three times. Older movie, came out in 2007. If you've seen this movie and you have something to say and you want to come on the show and talk about it with me, I think we could handle four people, including myself. I know we did like a book club thing a while back, maybe like 30, 40 episodes back, on some of John Holt's work. And that might have been like five or six people. So I think we can definitely handle four. If you've seen Charlie Bartlett and you want to come on the show and talk about, you know, some of the societal, educational issues in that film, psychological issues in that film, that would be great. So post on Facebook. Oh, that could be fun. We'll have like a little round table thing. So, all right, that's it. I'm done. Thank you very much for listening and take care. The Elf on the Shelf is watching you. What you say and what you do. The Elf on the Shelf is watching you.